Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My co-worker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Good, have a good day. We appreciate you being with us. We're happy to be here every single weekday morning, 6 until 10 Eastern Time, 3 until 7 Pacific, on the ever-expanding CBS Sports Radio Network. And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. Nate Ebner is scheduled to join us this morning here on the show. Nate is a former standout, world-class rugby player turned NFL special teams ace, and Ebner was a member of three Super Bowl champion teams with the New England Patriots. We'll talk about that journey coming up on the show in about an hour and a half from now. And it has been brought to my attention that today happens to be Meraz's birthday. Is this right, Bilotti? Were you aware of this little tweak in the schedule?
No, I knew it was coming up, and when Sam sent that, I just remembered it. I forgot, totally forgot about it.
Bogish, were you aware that it's Piggy Dool Dandy's birthday today?
No, I mean, I barely remember my birthday and my kid's birthday, so Sean has not reached that pantheon just yet for me to remember what day he was born.
Okay, interesting, because on last week's PGP, he had stated that he was not going to come in today. He was off because he was worried about the effects of the second vax, that some people have gotten sick from the second vax and been a little bedridden or weak or what have you. He had also reiterated that to me via text the other day, and now we find out today is his birthday. Is he actually just taking off for his birthday, or did he specifically schedule the second vax for the day before his birthday so that he would have cover to take off today? This feels very subversive from Meraz.
Well, I'm going to defend our good flabby friend for a second and remind you, I think you knew this, that he had his second appointment for the last Friday, but he changed it because he thought if he had it on Friday and didn't feel well on Saturday, it would mess him up for hosting on WFAN. So he moved it. Now, did he move it to today because of the birthday coincidence? Maybe, but the initial move of this was because of his hosting gig last weekend on The Fan.
Something smells like curdled swine here. Just so happens that Meraz takes off the day of his birthday, but doesn't bring it up to any of us, just says, oh, you know, I just want to get my second vaccine. You know, I just want to make sure that I'm doing everything right health-wise. Ha! Very convenient. Funny how that worked out. The NFL schedule released all day yesterday. We got a little dropping, like when a goose walks across the field outside of a pond. A little dropping here, a little dropping there, a little dropping there. And so we got Week 1 released early in the day. We had most of that while we were still on the air in the morning. Then we found out later in the day more of the schedule. Then by night, we got the entire schedule. Pete the Body Bilotti, would you mind queuing up some football music for me? Because I have the Sunday night football schedule. And the Sunday Nighters with Michaels and Collinsworth, always the best broadcast of the NFL week. They're the best broadcast team. Michaels is the best NFL play-by-play guy. They've got the best graphics, the best presentation, the best music. They've got the best everything. I love Sunday night, and they're always, usually, the best game. If they're not the best game, they're one of the best games. But they're usually supposed to be the best game of the weekend. I've got my top three Sunday night football games. But before I do that, I'll give you the first three out, okay? So here are my honorable mentions for the best Sunday night games this season. Number six, if you will, of the top matchups this year on Sunday night. Seahawks at Steelers. I like also the non-traditional matchups in the NFL where you can't really remember that type of thing happening before. What does it look like when that team, that jersey, those uniforms go to that stadium? That's how I feel about Seahawks at Steelers. It is a rare occurrence to have Russell Wilson of the Seahawks at Heinz Field with the terrible towels waving. But Russ on a Sunday night in Pittsburgh, Heinz Field is always an awesome backdrop for nighttime football. I think it's the black uniforms and the terrible towels and the cold weather and the natural grass. But I love watching the Steelers on Sunday nights or national TV in prime time. That's my number six. My number five would be Browns-Ravens. This one's in Baltimore. Last year, Browns-Ravens made for two epic matchups, including the 47-41 thriller. You gotta love Baker Mayfield versus Lamar Jackson. This is a divisional matchup. Maybe it decides the division. These are two of the most exciting offenses in football when Lamar Jackson's clicking, and there's big expectations on both. The Ravens have run into the playoff wall the last 2 years. The Browns are absolutely on the come, making the playoffs for the first time last year. I love this matchup in prime time. And my number four best Sunday night football matchup, Bills at Chiefs. A rematch of the AFC title game. You might be surprised that it did not make one of my top three matchups of the year. But for all of the reasons that you already know, Kansas City is another awesome theater stage for primetime and Sunday night. Assuming we've got a ton of fans in attendance, Chiefs fans always have one of the best home field advantages in all of football. The Bills looking to exact revenge after the AFC title game. And if the Bills have taken that next step, they can prove it right here. Take it on KC in KC on Sunday night. But they are not one of my top three matchups of the Sunday night football schedule. Number three, the Green Bay Packers are in Santa Clara to take on the San Francisco 49ers. If we assume Aaron Rodgers is under center, this is Rodgers versus Garoppolo, who's looking to hang on to his job, or Rodgers versus Trey Lance, or at least Rodgers versus the team that he wants to go and play for. This has all the makings. They always seem to play interesting games throughout the years. There's also something historically cool about the Green Bay Packers, the 49ers. They played in the postseason a number of times back in the 90s when Mike Holmgren was the head coach and Brett Favre was slinging it. Holmgren, of course, was the former assistant coach under Bill Walsh in San Francisco. You also have Packers-Niners, two traditional uniforms, being played on the West Coast, that late sunlight and sunset. There's just something about that matchup. Rodgers has played the Niners in the postseason as well. The NFC Championship game a couple of years ago. There is always little something with Rodgers playing his boyhood team, so I love this as the number three matchup on Sunday night. Assuming that Rodgers is under center, it's going to take a lot of the wind out of my sails if Jordan Love is under center. The number two tastiest matchup of the Sunday night slate, Chiefs at Ravens. The Ravens have been able to win a lot of games over the last 3 years with Lamar Jackson. They have not been able to solve the riddle of Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. Lamar Jackson, when he turned it on, it's as exciting as anybody in the NFL. Mahomes in prime time is Mahomes in prime time. Again, the Ravens are trying to unlock that final step to get to a Super Bowl. They can't even unlock the code to beat the Chiefs the regular season. They'll get another shot in Baltimore on Sunday night. That's my number two tastiest matchup of the Sunday night season. And my tastiest matchup is the all-everything game. It's the Belichick-Brady Bowl. Everybody has pointed to this for months now, knowing that it was coming up on the schedule, but when would it happen? It's Bucks in New England, Brady at Gillette Stadium, his home for 20 years, to take on the Patriots. Bill Belichick trying to defend Brady. Can he discombobulate the greatest quarterback of all time? Who knows? Maybe part of the reason the Patriots loaded up on free agent signings this offseason was not to be embarrassed in this game. Because if the Bucks whitewash you at Gillette Stadium, 34-10, it's a pretty humiliating black eye. It's got everything, and it's Sunday Night Football so that everybody gets to watch it. Once upon a time, Sunday night, the game of the year when the schedule came out was, where and when does Brady play Peyton Manning? It used to be Colts, Patriots, Patriots, Colts. When is that game? And then Peyton Manning moved to the Broncos, and it was, when is Patriots, Broncos? Sunday Night Football. When is that game? And now it's Patriots, Bucks, because of Brady and the defending Super Bowl champions. That's my favorite matchup of the Sunday Night Football slate. Bogues, have you looked at this Sunday Night Football schedule and earmarked one that you like more than any of the other games? One that you're looking forward to more than any others?
I mean, taking that one off the top that you just mentioned, because it's the obvious one. Give me Bills in KC in Week 5 Sunday night. A quick test early to see where Buffalo is off their great breakout season last year, going to Arrowhead. I love that one. You mentioned Seattle and Pittsburgh. I'll give you Colts at Niners. I like that game too. A little bit of a different matchup. Don't always see it. Indy is exciting. A good team already. Now there's Carson Wentz. Does he make them any better? And the Niners, to me, are always good TV. Love those West Coast Sunday night games, like in the twilight. So give me Colts, Niners as well.
So that's going to be a Carson Wentz against the Niners defense game. Colts and Niners. That's Week 7. By Week 7, let's hope that Carson Wentz looks a lot better than last year, or else the Colts are going to have buyer's remorse after trading for him. Another interesting nugget on the Sunday night schedule is that we have multiple Bears games. And last year, as the season wore on, the entire football-watching public was so sick of the Bears in prime time. We didn't want to see any more Mitchell Trubisky. Let's hope either Andy Dalton or Justin Fields is a lot better, because we open up the season at SoFi Stadium against the Rams, Bears and Rams, opening Sunday night. And then we have another Sunday nighter for the Bears later on in the season in Green Bay against the Packers. Now that one could have divisional connotation, could have playoff connotation. But again, Week 14, I don't want to see Andy Dalton and the Bears offense anywhere near my television screen in prime time. So let us hope by that point they have made the switch to Justin Fields. Maybe that's why they made that so late in the season. When we come back here on the DA Show, we've got your best audio of the day. Indeed, it is Soundcheck coming up here next. And that includes Teddy Bridgewater taking a swipe at his former coach, and James Harden being back. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Welcome back, and remember that you can listen and watch the DA Show at the same time by going to watchda.com. That is watchda.com. That is mobile friendly. So check us out on your phone as well, or your laptop, your PC, your smart TV, or on Twitch. Check us out on the CBS Sports Radio channel there. And this morning, a lot of action and a lot of discussion about the NFL schedule release. Is there a game that you love that you saw on the schedule when it was released? Or thoughts on teams that got screwed, bad ideas by the league, or good ideas by the NFL? Hit me up on Twitter, DA on CBS, or on the phone at 855-212-4CBS. Here is Teddy Bridgewater, who is now a member of the Denver Broncos. Last year was a member of the Carolina Panthers, but traded recently as the Panthers make way for Sam Darnold. He joined the All Things Covered podcast and says that as an offensive coaching staff in Carolina, they left a little something to be desired. Here's Bridgewater.
I'll just say this for Joe Brady's growth. I think, man, like that organization, they'll have to like just practice different things, you know, in different ways. Like one of the things we didn't do much of when I was there, we didn't practice 2 minute really. We didn't practice red zone, you know.
What?
So
the most important
That's what you used to have a whole day devoted for 2 minute in red zone. That's Thursday like, practice.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I guess the game is becoming about science, you know, and trying to keep guys healthy. So, he didn't practice on Fridays there, but you walk through like the red. You walk through the red zone stuff, and then Saturday you come out and practice red zone, but you only get like 15 live reps.
Okay, there's a couple of big takeaways here. Number one, I don't care how few reps you get. I don't care how little practice time you get. The thing that you have to be practicing is red zone. That is absolutely mandatory. It's like the only thing, that and turnovers, that define almost every NFL game. We know that essentially in the NFL, there's like three great teams and three awful teams. And then there's 20-some-odd teams in the middle that are basically differentiated by turnovers and red zone. It is differentiated, those teams, those 20-some-odd teams, the difference is who turns the football over more and if you score sevens instead of threes. That's it. Those are NFL games down, boiled down into a nutshell. And to not practice those full speed is insane. Now, Joe Brady came from college, LSU, took over in Carolina, the offense. Maybe he's still trying to figure out what works in the NFL. Maybe he's bringing atypical, non-traditional beliefs into the NFL. But again, if you boil down the NFL to its very essence, there's a few elite teams and a few awful teams, then everybody else is in the middle. And the teams that go 11-5 versus 5-11 are going to be due to turnovers, red zone, injuries. That's the mix. That's the math. That's the science. The second part is, first of all, so Joe Brady needs to absolutely practice at real speed more in red zone. You have to. You have to. Number two, if this is the byproduct of the new CBAs, where there's limited practice time, and maybe last year was different because of COVID. Maybe last year because of COVID, just things had to be altered and manipulated far more than usual. If the byproduct of the new NFL CBA is that there's not enough time for red zone, not red zone channel, by the way, there's always enough time for that. If there's not enough time for red zone practice, then these are the issues with bringing back, ratcheting back all the practice time. And by the way, it's going to be even less into this year because of the expanded regular season schedule going forward in the 17th game. The owner said, we want a 17th game that we can sell. We don't care if we only practice X number of days. We don't care if you walk back your practice days. This is what I hate. This is what I hate, is that the NFL owners would sell their souls, including the quality of the games and practice, which you need some practice to execute anything in life. They would roll it all back just as long as they got the content to sell. Could you imagine having to build an IKEA dresser for like a wedding or some type of, you know, huge moment in your life? and having never done it before, and they're like, okay, boom, here's the dresser. You've got an hour and a half to do it, and you better do it well because everybody's watching, and the wedding depends on it. Be like, Have you ever tried to dig into one of those IKEA dressers or bookcases or anything? It's brutal. And only by like the third IKEA thing that you build are you finally like, oh, right, okay, I get it. This is why this is written like this, and they don't mention the extra pegs. It's all in Swedish. Okay, yeah, right, okay. I kind of know what they're doing now. You can't just jump into that. That's like going into NFL weekend without red zone in real time. Elsewhere, Matthew Stafford is going to get a chance to face his former team, the Lions, in Week 7, the Matthew Stafford revenge game. Here is Matthew.
It'll be different. You know, it's something I've never, obviously experienced. I've played for the same franchise for 12 years, so this will be a new one for me. Obviously, a bunch of great friends and, on the other side of the ball, an organization I care a lot about. But, that weekend, I'll be doing everything I can to make sure that we come out on top.
I really like the Stafford addition in Los Angeles for the Rams. I think he is a significant upgrade over Jared Goff, and I like it for two reasons. Number one, McVay wants to run that offense with a much more explosive bent on it than Goff could provide. Goff was fine at times. He had a couple of really good moments, but by and large, Goff couldn't run the offense at the high gear that he wants to play at. He wants to play faster and bigger and more explosive. Stafford gives you that ability. Stafford has that arm. Stafford has that cerebral mentality. Stafford's just an elite quarterback compared to Jared Goff. So let's see what McVay's offense looks like when he's got a real quarterback under center. That's the first part. The second part is Stafford always deserved better in Detroit. He always did. He always deserved better than having chumps as head coaches and the new GM, the new head coach, trying to change the culture, never winning a playoff game, haven't won a playoff game since Barry Sanders was there. I mean, there's just always been something about the Lions that would submarine the season. And Stafford always deserved better, so I'm excited to see what Stafford does when he's got a winning culture, a winning roster, a stable coach, and big expectations on him. I'm fired up for Stafford in LA. And finally, here's James Harden, who is returning for the Brooklyn Nets at the same time that, once again, one of their other players are exiting, this time Kyrie Irving. Here is the beard.
I think these next few games are key. And then that week break that we have before, it gets real, our practice time. It's time for us to get things corrected on both ends of the ball and just sort things out, make sure we're on the same page.
So here's the interesting thing about where the Brooklyn Nets sit right now. They got two more games left in the regular season. Okay, this weekend they've got the Bulls and the Cavs. They wrap things up with the Bulls and the Cavs, both at home at Barclays this weekend. Then you heard James Harden mention the week break. That's because the week is going to be broken up with the play-in tournament games. So for the top six seeds in both conferences that don't have to worry about the play-in, they get a full week's break before the playoffs begin. So this is another way under the radar that the play-in tournament works. Not only does it put more emphasis on guys not resting as much because you need to make sure you lock in one of the top six seeds, not only is there an urgency to avoid having to play your way into the playoffs and then kind of exhausting yourself just to get into the postseason, but also there's a reward for being one of the top six is that you get a week break. You wrap up on a Sunday. You don't start until the following weekend because the middle of the week is all filled up by the play-in tournament. I think that's why, again, the play-in tournament might be unpopular with guys like Luka or LeBron or Mark Cuban, but that's why it's got juice. And I think that's also why the Nets feel okay. They're going to avoid the play-in. They're going to wrap up on Sunday. And then they've got a whole week that they can rest and get healthy and try to get their guys back for the playoffs. And that's going to be huge because, as we've known the entire season, the Brooklyn Nets will go as far as their health takes them. If all three guys are on the floor and healthy, the sky is the limit. If not, which is a huge if because they've been unhealthy all season long, then it's going to blow up in their face. That's your sound check. Standing by with our headline this morning is a kind Sir Andrew Bogish. Mr. Bogues, good morning. What do we got?
DA, good morning again. Now, this would be a good day for Sean to be here because a lot went well for his baseball team last night. They beat the Rays again, 1-0 in Tampa Bay, with Gerrit Cole mowing down 12-8. His manager, Aaron Boone.
He's so good and so fun to watch and so versatile out there and able to, you know, get you out in so many different ways. You know, he was very pitch efficient early on there. Anytime he did lose leverage in a count, got behind, he made big pitches.
It's the first time since July of 2019, including the playoffs, that the Yanks have won two straight from the Rays. And as they were winning, the Red Sox were losing.
And here's the first pitch to Matt Olson, driven to right field, and that's going to be headed for downtown Boston and gone. And the A's take a 4-1 lead.
That is Ken Korach on A's Radio. Oakland, a 4-1 win at Fenway. I believe the Yanks and Sox are now even in that vaunted loss column.
Right.
Boston remains
that's the
in
only
first
column anybody
place.
Ever worries about.
The Yanks, if you're scoring at home, are eighth overall in baseball right now. They are two games behind Oakland, if my math is correct, for that all-important third spot, I guess now by next Saturday, not the one coming.
So what
in
do you
just
think? If you
days.
Are Mraz, do you take the bait on Double or Nothing? He proclaimed that the Yankees would have a top three record in baseball by this Saturday. That's not going to happen. But I said, look, if you're so confident they're still going to do it, which he is, he said by next week and it would have been, I would have won the bet. I said, if you're so confident, Double or Nothing. I will double the punishment if you're wrong, but if you're right, once again, me, Bogues, and Bilotti, we have to oink like pigs and probably do something else. I'm waiting on Mraz's official decision because he said at the end of yesterday's show that he's in on Double or Nothing, but I need official verification from him today before we get too far into this weekend. Would you take Double or Nothing if you're Mraz?
Yes, I would, because I think that there is a pretty good chance the Yankees can get to the third best record in baseball. There are a bunch of teams between them and third, which is the good news for us. There's a lot of different avenues for help. We just need three guys to stay ahead of the Yankees, and we're good. But I think that the possibility of them getting to number three by next Saturday is good enough that I'd roll the dice here and do Double or Nothing, assuming, again, I kind of know what your suggestion is. So I'm coming from a factual standpoint. I'm willing to risk what you're going to put on the table for Sean today to the possibility of being right by next weekend.
We are going to start banging.
Okay. Yankees are banging. Okay, we'll see what Mraz says today at some point of the show. He's off today, but we're going to have him on the phone.
I refuse.
The White Sox, by the way, have the best win percentage in baseball right now, thanks to a five-game win streak, 13-8 over the Twins last night. The Astros used five homers to beat the Angels 9-1, and the Royals lost in Detroit 4-2, extending their skid to 10 games. Back-to-back wins for the Dodgers, 7-1 over the Mariners last night. Miami, a 3-2 win in Arizona, and the Blue Jays beat the Braves 4-1. Atlanta righty Mike Soroka had a setback in his return from an August torn Achilles. He'll have a follow-up procedure next week. Plans now on returning this season are on hold. Even with the play-in tourney, the Pelicans will not make the postseason. Stan Van Gundy's team eliminated with last night's 125-107 loss in Dallas.
It's disappointing to end the year like this when, you know, we thought we had a shot and then we're going out there with, you know, five of our top six guys in minutes played not playing, you know. Things like that. That's disappointing.
Zion, Brandon Ingram, and Lonzo Ball among those out last night. The win keeps the Mavs a game ahead of the Lakers for sixth in the West. LA fought off the Rockets 124-122 without LeBron and Anthony Davis. The Blazers a 105-98 win in Utah. The Nets beat the Spurs 128-116 with James Harden coming back with 18 points and 11 assists. The Hawks clinched their playoff spot 120-116 over the Wizards, and the Celtics losing in Cleveland 102-94. That clinches a spot for the Knicks and locks Boston into the play-in tourney. Among the highlights from last night's NFL schedule release is Tom Brady taking his Buccaneers to Foxborough on Sunday night in Week 4. Your Thanksgiving menu is Bears-Lions, Raiders-Cowboys, and Bills-Saints. The Packers reportedly signing Blake Bortles. Regardless of Aaron Rodgers' unhappiness, Green Bay needed at least one more QB, with only Jordan Love on the roster as well. And the Man City-Chelsea Champions League final on May 29th moved to Portugal. It was to be in Istanbul, but the UK is not allowing anyone to travel to Turkey right now because of COVID. It would not grant a waiver to the roughly 2,000 people that would have needed to make the trip for this game. Not just players, but UEFA staff, broadcasters, business partners. So again, the Champions League final now in Portugal, not Istanbul. DA, back to you.
Excellent. Thank you, Bogues. Greasy tweets, in DA, we here in Nashville, very excited for the NFL maintaining the Titans-Texans game for the regular season finale. Derrick Henry and his 250-yard, three-touchdown finale, thanks you. Yeah. Do the Texans even try to tackle him in Week 17 when they're wrapping up their three-win season? The answer is probably no. A lot of business decisions in late December, early January for the Texans this year. When we come back here on the DA show, Matt Harvey returned to Citi Field yesterday. He got lit up and yet was really grateful for it. Wait, what? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This year like last year, the best is right here on CBS.
It's the DA show on CBS Sports Radio.
Saturday on CBS, the PGA Tour is in Texas with a fantastic field, including the world's number one golfer, Dustin Johnson, competing at the Byron Nelson Championship. Live coverage begins 3 Eastern, noon Pacific, Saturday only on CBS.
CBS, spectacular, yeah!
The DA shows live in sparkling Technicolor each and every morning. Not only can you watch us live at watchda.com, but also on your Twitch channel at CBS Sports Radio, but you could also watch us on social media. Check out our clips every day on Twitter, at CBS Sports Radio's handle, and at DA on CBS, and also on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDAShow, and on YouTube as well, the CBS Sports Radio channel on YouTube. Yesterday was a heartwarming day in a really weird way. Matt Harvey returned as a member of the Baltimore Orioles to Citi Field, the site of the apex of his career. Of course, when he was a member of the Mets was the only time he was relevant in his entire career. Since then, he's bounced around. He went to the Angels. He went to the A's. He went to the Reds. He's now with the Orioles. And everywhere he's gone after New York, he's been one of the worst starting pitchers in baseball, you could argue. And yesterday was no different. As he got lit up, he got the hook after 4 1/3 innings. He gave up 8 hits, 7 runs, all of them earned, and took the L as the Mets ran away with things. They built up a 7-0 lead after 5, tagging Matt Harvey, and won 7-1. The Mets are in first place in the National League East. The Orioles have been sinking since a good start. They are 16-21. But an interesting thing happened on the way to yesterday's start for Matt Harvey. He felt really good. He felt really nostalgic. He felt really romantic about everything because the Mets, during a otherwise kind of overshadowed day game in May against the Orioles, the Mets fans that were there, about 8,000 of them, gave him a pretty nice ovation. Kind of a thank you and a salute for that handful of years where Matt Harvey starts were a citywide holiday. It seems like a completely alternate universe right now in 2021 to think of Matt Harvey Day, but Happy Harvey Day was a thing in New York City. Happy Harvey Day for 2 or 3 years was the biggest thing in New York, that it was a show. The Dark Knight of Gotham was going to take the mound, it was going to shut you down, and was going to flex and be the alpha male and be the alpha dog that you want on the hill in a big spot to change the trajectory of your franchise. You have to remember at this point in time, about 8 years ago, the Mets are coming out of the doldrums of the Madoff disaster. And so they've cut all of the payroll and the team was going through a major transition and they were cutting corners and nobody, quote, wanted to be a Met. It wasn't sexy to be a Met. Even though they were a New York team, even though they were just in the NLCS a couple of years earlier, they had fallen on really hard times. And here was Matt Harvey, who had grown up a Yankee fan in Connecticut, but wanted to be the man. And he was big, and he was strapping, and he was built well, and he was the alpha. I want the ball. I'm the cowboy. I'm shutting you down. Jump on my back. I'm changing this thing. There's not many people that can do that. And he delivered. His starts were holidays. And he delivered. And I was at Citi Field for that 2013 All-Star game. And when he took the mound at Citi Field at the height of his powers during his best season, it all kind of aligned. And those flash bulbs went off. And he shut down the side. Man, the electricity in that building was something I'll never forget. I just remember the wave of flashbulbs and just the energy in the building, the anticipation of every throw, every pitch, every out. This was going to be the successor to Dwight Gooden. Homegrown, ace on the mound. You can't touch him. You know you can't touch him. He's throwing the heat, and it's over. And Matt Harvey's entire career changes in Game 5 of the World Series in 2015, another game that I was at, where he wants the ball in the ninth. He's going to shut down the Royals. If they win Game 5, it's a 3-2 series, and even though they got to go back to Kansas City, they've got their two other aces coming up. They've got Syndergaard and DeGrom, and the Royals didn't want to have to face them in Game 6 and Game 7 with all of that pressure on him. And he's at Citi Field, a sold-out Citi Field, and the fans want him out there, and he convinces Terry Collins to go back out there and implodes. And Harvey doesn't have it, and Harvey loses the game. They go to extras. Ultimately, the Royals end up winning. They clinch the World Series in 5. And Matt Harvey's never the same. That is the pivot point of his career. He is never the same. And he ends up becoming overweight, enjoying the nightlife way too much. You know, at his peak, dating Russian supermodels and being seen out and around the town in New York City was cute. It was like Joan Ameth. There's a New York guy, Reggie Jackson. A star in New York City, enjoying the fruits of being a celebrity as a young athlete. Hey, great. Well, when you're not very good and your ERA is 7, when you're dotting around the city, enjoying the nightlife a little bit too much, it's not cool anymore. And he becomes a villain almost overnight. Snap of the fingers, becomes a villain. And will never be a great pitcher ever again. Now, some of that is injury. I think some of that is just squandered potential. Harvey was great when he was dominant. He didn't have the mental aptitude. He didn't have the mental stamina. He didn't have the mental strength to be a great pitcher. He didn't have great stuff. When he could overpower you, young, invigorated, healthy, yeah, great, confident. When it was taken away, he didn't have it. He couldn't develop. He couldn't carve. He couldn't evolve. Now he's just a nothing. Now he's just a middle of the rotation, back end of the rotation guy trying to hang on to Major League Baseball. And yesterday was happy in a game that he gave up 7 runs and took the L because he was nostalgic. And I have said this on the show in the past. I can't remember, and I am open to suggestions, I can't remember a New York City athlete having the city by the you-know-what, by the cojones. He was everything for 3 years. He was the biggest star in the city. That includes a city with Eli Manning, the Giants, and the Yankees, he was the biggest thing. And Carmelo and the Knicks. For those couple of years, he is the biggest thing and then turned almost overnight into a punchline. Look, there's Fat Matt Harvey, Fat Harvey, drunk again, whatever again, late night again, bickering with the front office, doesn't want to get surgery, can't get anybody out. You know, he just became a total punchline. And it was crazy how dramatically and quickly it happened. How will I remember the Matt Harvey Mets years? I'll remember the first 3 years gloriously and the next couple of years terribly. And certainly there was some appreciation yesterday for just the first 3 years. But I'll remember the good with the bad because it shouldn't have ended like it did. Harvey let it go. Harvey let it go. He squandered a star career. And it's not all roses. It's not all, hey, thanks for 2013 and 2014 and 2015. It could have been so much more. And yeah, the injury happened, but that wasn't the only reason it got away from Harvey. Bogues, you're a Mets fan. I'd like to know what you thought about the warm ovation that the Mets fans gave him yesterday and how you'll remember Harvey.
Yeah, it was a weird day because a lot of this is Harvey's fault. I mean, he did himself no favors. He had two significant injuries, so that was certainly changing the course of his career. But there were a lot, too many self-inflicted wounds. So, like, part of me was almost angry at him for a long time because he kind of messed up what should have been a really long-term relationship with him and the Mets and the city. But now, you know, now years later, seeing him basically a shell of himself pitching-wise, it's hard not to feel bad for him because maybe some of those mistakes were out of his control and he deserves sympathy and not anger. It was a weird day, and I'm happy that for it was all positive from the fans to him. I'm glad there was no booing, there was no nothing. It was all love. I don't want to say he deserved it, but that was the way it should have gone. And then the Mets won, which worked out pretty well too.
Matt Harvey's 32 years old. And on the one hand, you're like, wow, he's already 32? Because you remember him when he was 24 or 23 and dominant. At the same time, you're like, he's only 32. He should have so much more baseball left. And he's just not. I mean, he's just a sub-500, 4-5 ERA pitcher, back end of the rotation type of guy. And it is such a learning lesson of what celebrity and spotlight and expectations can do to young athletes. He is one of those stories gone wrong. He is one of those, you know, those tales of woe where a young guy, a young athlete has it all and squanders it. And you're right, the injuries are significant. But it was about more than that. He just stopped caring. And he got angry and he got defensive and he got stubborn and he wouldn't be told no. And so on the one hand, it's a great trait because you have this belief in yourself and that forces Terry Collins to put him out there in the ninth inning in game 5 of the World Series. At the same time, that stubbornness ran him into multiple walls of people that were trying to manage his career and what was best for him. And he refused to listen and he refused to change his attitude and his behavior. And Harvey, I mean, think about what the Mets rotation could have been if Harvey remained an all-star and you had DeGrom, who is essentially the best pitcher in baseball today. If he's not, he's on a very short list, but he's as dominant as any pitcher in baseball week in, week out, year in, year out. If you had a dominant Harvey at 2, and Syndergaard had lived up to his potential at 3. I mean, you would have, like, the rotation of all rotations. And yet, Harvey was not able to avoid the trappings of the nightlife in New York City. Maybe he would have been better being in Cincinnati. Maybe he would have been better being an anonymous player for a mid-level team in Major League Baseball. But in New York, it was a terrible combination. When we come back, let's talk Bucks-Pats on the NFL schedule.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns,
including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.